Joe Foster. Joe was responsible for developing the National Let's Get Moving pathway for the Department of Health. And this is the behaviour change system that many Sport England funded programmes now use to engage people into physical activity. She then initiated the physical activity programme at Macmillan Cancer Support. And while there, she developed the award-winning Move More programme for Macmillan. And the programme engaged over 100,000 inactive people living with cancer into physical activity and recently won that Behaviour Change Award. She was also responsible for driving forward work with the Richmond Group of Health Charities. I think that's like Cancer Research UK, British Heart Foundation, British Lung Foundation, Macmillan Cancer Support, lots of different big health charities. And she helped them to start working with Sport England to deliver physical activity programmes as well. Jo is now working at Public Health England, and she's a real visionary and a leader, and we're really lucky to be able to hear from her today. During the interview, we're going to be talking about Macmillan Cancer Support's award-winning physical activity program and how they managed to engage those 100,000 people living with cancer into physical activity. We're going to talk about how they managed, what kind of the steps were, what was involved in that actual engagement. How do you engage a hard-to-reach group like that? We're going to talk about the Move More Behaviour Change Pack and the digital support and why that works so effectively. Before we get into the main interview, we're just going to have a quick word from our sponsor. And today's interview is sponsored by Make Sport Fun. Are you frustrated with engaging inactive people into your activities? Do you ever end up reaching active people and they take part more rather than the inactive people you really want to reach? Do you find that people say they want to get active, but then when you put the activities on, they don't turn up? Are you expected to do marketing, but your background's in public health or sports development, not in marketing? If so, Make Sport Fun is here to help. Make Sport Fun offers a range of marketing services to help you engage more inactive people into your activities. Whether you need someone to run a campaign or show you how to use social media or other digital techniques to engage more inactive people from hard-to-reach groups, or you need someone to run training for marketing training for your sports clubs or conduct some research into your target audience, whatever you need, Make Sport Fun can help. We've worked with over 100 organizations in sport and activity, and we've got an average feedback score from clients of 9.2 out of 10. And we're the only marketing agency who specializes in engaging inactive people from hard-to-reach groups. So whatever your needs, get in touch. You can just email me, john@makesportfun.com. That's John, J-O-H-N, @makesportfun.com. Or I'll explain at the end of the interview how you can book a call directly in my calendar. So that's that done. Now we're going to move on to the main interview. So, Joe, if you aren't already, can you unmute yourself? Thanks very much for coming on the call today. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much, John, and for your kind words. I feel quite embarrassed by your introduction.
Well, it's all true. So let's talk about Macmillan Cancer Support. Can you think back, I know it's quite a while ago, but can you talk a little bit about why were Macmillan doing a physical activity program?
Sure. Well, we've known for a long time that enabling people to be more physically active can prevent many long-term conditions, including some types of cancer, and can also help with the rehabilitation of certain conditions, such as heart and lung conditions. But it hadn't been known in cancer. And in 2010, it came to the attention of both the Department of Health and Macmillan Cancer Support that there was a growing body of evidence that showed that being physically active during and after cancer treatment could help. And not only that, there was emerging evidence that it was cost effective. And at that time, there was a partnership between the Department of Health, Macmillan Cancer Support, called the National Cancer Survivorship Initiative. And that had been set up in England to look at how clinical and quality of life outcomes could be improved at the end of treatment. Many people were living longer, but they weren't necessarily living well. And at the time, I was working at the Department of Health, looking at how we could integrate physical activity promotion into clinical care pathways, particularly through primary care. I'd led on the development of Let's Get Moving as a physical activity care pathway, and McMillan decided that they were going to start investing in physical activity and to understand what, explore the question, you know, what would integrating physical activity into cancer care look like? And so I moved across, and the reason they wanted to do this was in cancer there are three main types of outcome. There are cancers which, depending on the time of your diagnosis and the type of tumour, which have either a limited survival, like lung cancer, a medium-term survival, or a sort of longer-term survival. So, for example, the majority of breast and prostate cancers are now considered curative, not all, but some. It does depend on when you're diagnosed. So some people are living longer, but they're not necessarily living well, but other people are not living longer. At least one in five struggle with very severe consequences of their cancer treatment. That can include damage to the heart, bone thinning, muscle wasting, type 2 diabetes, osteoarthritis, depression, extreme fatigue. One in two people who have cancer have two or more comorbidities. One in three have three or more. And what the evidence was showing was actually that physical activity, enabling people to be active at all stages of cancer care, could help improve these clinical outcomes. So obviously preventing the 20 conditions we know that being active can prevent, but also help with mitigating some of those consequences of treatment, including cancer-related fatigue. And there's emerging evidence that it could help with some tumour groups to slow disease progression. And that was a massive deal. So there's one study around lung cancer, there's another study around brain cancers, and these are cancers with very poor outcomes. So it was a real opportunity. So that's why McMillan are working in this space.
Okay, so that makes sense. So there's all of this evidence showing that physical activity is good for people living with cancer. It can help with the self potentially, and it definitely helps with the side effects, helps with recovery. So what's next? How did you approach it?
Sure. Well, I approached it in a twofold way. So one of which is probably the way that most of us operate, which was it was important to take some opportunistic actions, some quick wins to keep the momentum going and the interest up. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But fundamentally, the most important thing was really looking at it from the perspective of the system. You know, what needed to change in order to make the promotion of physical activity at all stages of cancer treatment and ensure that there was then the support in place for people to become active, what needed to change. So I worked across the organisation to co-create a strategy and also worked with external organisations to gather stakeholder insight. So we developed a strategy, which was really important, that had organisation-wide buy-in. I set up an expert advisory group, which included academics, service providers, and also patient representatives. We set up a community of practice, particularly of service providers who we then worked with across the whole of the UK. We developed something called a theory of change, which is a very jargonistic word, but basically what it means is if the ambition is to support people to be active during and after treatment, what in the system needs to change? So what do the people who have cancer need to do differently? What outcome would they need to achieve? What do those close to them need to do differently? So their friends, their families, their carers. What do the professionals that they engage with, so particularly healthcare professionals, need to do differently? What do service providers of physical activity services need to do differently? What do funders of services and local policy makers need to do differently, and what do national policy makers need to do differently. So really understanding what are the outcomes across all the different elements of the system that we need to change. And then for each one, developing something called a logic model. And some people might be really aware of these, but that basically then pulls back to say, if this is the outcome that we're working towards, let's say we want all healthcare professionals to advocate physical activity to their cancer patients during treatment. What activity are you going to do to bring about that change? So we developed a logic model and then used a model called, it's the Medical Research Council's model for developing complex interventions. So again, that sounds really complicated, but basically it means if, for example, we want to change the behaviour of healthcare professionals, what does the evidence say and how you go about doing that? What do the healthcare professionals say about why they do or don't advocate physical activity? And then developing an intervention that's based on that evidence and based on that insight. So that's quite a, you know, a long-term way of working. It's very robust. It's been incredibly effective. But that was why it was important at the same time to be opportunistic. So I was fortunate enough at Macmillan to have an absolutely fantastic media and marketing department. We did a big media push. So developed, for example, an evidence review, some patient information, and then really pushed it in the media and got global coverage, which was very exciting to be part of. I don't think I can take the credit for that. I think that's Macmillan's media team that takes the credit for that. But that really raised the profile with national governments, but it raised the profile internally as well to the importance of the issue. Whilst we were doing I was leading on that sort of longer, slower strategy development and sort of the robust intervention development.
Wow, that's a lot there. Okay, so
yes.
You got the quick wins with the media coverage. So one of your quick wins was global media coverage. That's pretty cool. You developed the strategy. You've got the expert advisory group. You've got the logic models, the theory of change. I think there's probably some more I've missed there as well. So there's a huge amount going on.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds like it's probably not that easy. What were some of the problems that you faced along the way there?
I think the biggest problem, which we all face, is that trying to get people to become and stay active is complex because we're working in a complex system. And when I first started working in the area of physical activity for health, I focused much more on the individual behaviour change. You know, how do we change the behaviour of the public, rather than really understanding that, you know, you can't change people's behaviour without changing the behaviour of the professionals that they engage with, the services that are provided, that what commissioners commission. And in order to do that, you've got to work across the system simultaneously. You can't actually control what people choose to do, whether that's a funder of a service or the individual. And getting a cohesive program that deals with this sort of level of complexity is a real challenge, whilst also getting internal buy-in to delivering against that sort of level of complexity. So it was challenging. I was extremely fortunate in how organisationally supportive Macmillan is, and also that as an organisation, whilst the constraints of everything that's going on in the public sector at the moment, they sat outside that, which meant we could really, keep moving forward, keep innovating, keep working in partnership. But yes, trying to change the system and trying to change that system quickly isn't something that's possible. And so that's probably the biggest problem was facing, you know, myself and the scale of my ambition versus reality.
Yeah. Yeah, organizational change is a huge thing, isn't it? Okay, so that makes sense. So there's all of the kind of current system and the way it's currently working standing in your way. What along the way did you find worked best? What were some of the bits where you did get successes?
I think what worked best was within the system approach, having very specific targeted projects. So, for example, the work that McMillan did with healthcare professionals was really robust, and the evaluation shows it's really working. So, for example, we carried out insight research to really understand why health and allied healthcare professionals do or don't advocate healthy lifestyle behaviour change using COMBI theory, so looking at their capability. You know, do they have the knowledge? Do they have the skills? Their opportunity and then their motivation. And what we found is that whilst they knew that healthy lifestyles was something that was important, they didn't know why it was really specifically important. You know, why was physical activity important to this patient who was, you know, 80 with advanced cancer, who's frail with multiple morbidities? Why does it matter to that person? And then how on earth do you talk to people about it? What we found was a lot of healthcare professionals, even those who were keen, were quite keen to leave it to the end, you know, would cherry pick patients who seemed to have them sort of, you know, perhaps they raised physical activity themselves and asked about it. They looked like they might be sporty or fitter. You know, they were, had a curative cancer. They were at the end of treatment. So we knew that healthcare professionals needed to know that it was important, that it was important at all stages of treatment, and that was something that the patients themselves wanted to hear about. And then we looked at the skills that they needed to be able to do that. And what we developed was a training package, but we went through quite a robust process to get that training package. That, you know, we knew that healthcare professionals don't have long, that some of them work shifts, they're working nights. So how do you accommodate for that? It's not the case of saying, oh, right, we're running a training session on Wednesday afternoon. That doesn't work for people in secondary care and clinics. So it's delivered by webinars, it's delivered online, and it's accredited as well by all of the Royal Colleges. So I was really proud of, so that was led on particularly by Justin Webb, who's now at London Met University, but he led on that piece of work for me in the team, and also did an evaluation which showed that it was effective in shifting clinician behaviour. They were much more likely to advocate physical activity having done this short one-hour training. So having very specific targeted projects with really clear outcomes, that works well.
And for anybody listening who's interested in hearing more about that work that Justin's done, I'm actually going to be interviewing him as well next week. So have a look on our email me afterwards, and I'll send you the link to be able to sign up for that as well. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the behaviour change intervention. So kind of not so much, I guess, at the strategic level and the how do you change the whole organisation, but getting down to that level of the work that's actually done with the people living with cancer. You've taken an approach which is different to kind of the traditional approach in physical activity. Instead of putting on new activities a lot of the time for trying to get people active, you'd focused on the behaviour change support. Why did you do that? Why has that approach been so effective instead of just putting on new activities?
Sure. Well, there are a number of factors. So one of which is the insight research that McMillan carried out. So we did insight research looking at people at all stages of their cancer journey. So people during treatment, people after treatment, people with advanced and incurable cancers. We looked at young adults to very older adults. We looked at people from lower socioeconomic groups to higher socioeconomic groups. and found that there were four common groups of barriers which were also motivators. So they had a different level of importance. So the first one was individual. So was it part of someone's self-identity to be physically active? Were they active prior to their diagnosis? Did they believe that they could become active again? And that was the greatest determinant whether someone would be active during or after treatment. The second one was social. Was it part of their social support network? So, for example, if they were an older adult living on their own and their pet has died, perhaps they used to always walk the dog, or perhaps Betty next door, used to go to the shops with them, and that support has disappeared, that would be a major, again, that's the second major factor. It's like, is there a social support to help them become active? Is it part of their social group identity? And that social group identity was really important with younger adults as well. The third one was really around the physical side of the individual. Were they struggling with consequences of treatment, like severe fatigue, muscle wasting? Were they frail? Do they have comorbidities that were also challenging? And then the fourth one was the environment in which they live. Do they have access to facilities, whether that's parks and open spaces or leisure, that are pleasant and crime-free and easily accessible? Normally in the world of physical activity, we tend to focus on the last two. So, what's somebody's condition and how does that impact them on being active? And are there the services available? But what the insight showed us was actually it's the individual motivation, the social support, is what changes someone's physical activity behavior for those who have cancer. So if they were individually motivated and they had social support, they could have really, really severe physical consequences and live in a very in an environment that is not conducive to be active, and they would become active. Conversely, they could have no physical consequences. They could have, a beautiful park on their doorstep, a leisure centre next door with loads of services going on. But if they didn't have that as part of their identity, they didn't believe they could do it, and they didn't have social support, then they weren't going to change. What was critical was the power of professionals, particularly healthcare professionals, to cut across all of those barriers. And that's why we focused on healthcare. And then why we focused on looking at that behaviour change support. So we looked at all the evidence on how do you change the behaviour of an individual rather than what is the right type of physical activity for people who have cancer to do. NICE guidance on behaviour change says that people should be provided with regular motivational support for at least a year. And that's now even been integrated into the latest guidance on exercise on referral. As part of the insight research we did, we asked and looked at whether people were interested in group activity, and if they were, whether they wanted that group activity to be cancer specific. And what people said was that they wanted to know that being active was safe, and they wanted to do the activity that was right for them. But that didn't necessarily mean that they wanted that to be cancer specific and in a group. Being right for them could be that it's something that they do with their family, they might be working, they might be carers, so they needed a huge amount of flexibility. Now, that didn't mean that people didn't want cancer-specific group, it's just not everybody did. So I developed an intervention that built on all of that evidence that said, right, we need healthcare professionals to advocate physical activity, and then people need motivational support to become active. Now, they might have some quite complex consequences of treatment that have to be taken into account. If someone is at risk of spinal fractures because of their condition, there are certain activities that it would be unwise to do. If someone has peripheral neuropathy, they've had severe muscle wasting, they might be at high risk of falls. They might be really benefit from focusing on strength and balance activities. But rather than it be about you know, this is the patient, this is their problem, this is the best activities that would help them. We focused on how do we support this person to become and stay active within their community in the long term. And we worked in partnership with over 50 local areas to understand how could we apply that evidence and what would need to change locally for that to work. Like, what would that actually look like? And we found that it had to be slightly different in different areas. So, for example, in Luton. Luton has a fantastic service. It's been it's now been commissioned by their local CCG, and they've brought other long-term conditions into it. But what they were looking at is providing that motivational support, but predominantly in a leisure setting. So having trained exercise professionals who are trained in the Level 4 Cancer Rehabilitation Qualification, and others also trained in motivational interviewing, who would carry out a needs assessment and provide motivational support, but they also provided a lot of activities. So they provided one-to-one activities, they provided all sorts of get back into sporting activities open to people with long-term conditions, such as walking football. They run the Walking for Health scheme, and they ran cancer-specific groups, and they provided additional motivational support within those group and one-to-one settings, in addition to the behaviour change interventions. Whilst Lincolnshire took a very different approach. So there they didn't provide any specific activities, but linked up and advocated and quality assured what was already available in the community, and have exercise professionals, again, who are trained in cancer rehabilitation and motivational interviewing, who go out into the community and meet with people on a one-to-one basis, and then provide long-term motivational support. Now, what we did, we had an external evaluation that looked across the different approaches that people took across the UK and grouped them together. So we also had, for example, ones that operated in healthcare settings, like in Shropshire or Guy's and St Thomas's in London, and looked at, and the evaluation looked at, you know, what was working well, what wasn't working well, and grouped those together. And what we found, based on the data that was collected, because there was a standard evaluation framework that all sites needed to respond to, was that people became active in the long term, and their clinical and quality of life outcomes improved. And that was a big deal, because we were also recruiting people who were during treatment and who have advanced cancers, where you would normally expect to see quite a significant decline. And the anecdotal feedback that we would get would be, you know, people, you know, their activity levels might be declining, but it's not declining as fast as it would have done. So, but overall, statistically, we saw a significant increase in physical activity levels that was maintained at a year. We saw improvements in fatigue outcomes. We saw improvements in quality of life outcomes. And whilst, you know, this isn't a randomized control trial, this isn't a head-to-head trial between exercise on referral for cancer versus, you know, taking a behavior change approach. It was much more experimental than that. We worked really closely with the sites. We brought them together in a what we call a community of practice, and we brought everyone together regularly and learnt from them. And whilst they were testing, we were developing central solutions to make things easier for them, like the training for healthcare professionals, some longer-term training on behaviour change skills for the exercise professionals, social marketing resources, and a whole plethora of other activities, training on how to collect data. We learned a lot about, actually, if you want to take this approach, it's quite complicated, and it does require working in a different way, and we try to centralise certain functions to make it easier whilst allowing people to innovate locally. And I know that McMillan will soon be publishing some best practice guidance on how, on all the learning from the approach. And I believe they'll also be publishing an updated evaluation as well.
Wow, that is a lot there. Okay, let me see if I can unpick a little bit of it, because that you covered so much. Okay, so going back to the kind of the behavior change interventions versus putting on more activities, what I got from that is you're saying that there's nothing wrong with putting on new activities, but it's only going to be helpful for a proportion of the overall people you're trying to get active. Some people okay. want group activities that are condition specific, and those people, if they're available on the day and time that the activity's on, that might be an awesome fit for them. But yeah. you've got these four levels. You've got individual, social, environment, and physical. And the environment and physical is part of that, putting on those activities. But the individual and social side of things, if somebody isn't motivated, if they're not interested, if they don't see it as part of their identity, they don't have the social support for it, then it doesn't matter how good the activities are, they're not going to take part. So by having the motivational interviewing support and the healthcare professionals promoting the activity, you were able to address those two, which, were you saying that those two are more important than environment?
Yeah,
or
that,
just
that,
the same list?
No, they're massively more important. So the pecking order is, you know, that individual motivation, that self-identity, the self-efficacy is the biggest determinant of whether someone will become active or not. Then their social support, and down from that, then there's sort of their physical consequences of their treatment and comorbidities, and then what's available. There's a joke that sometimes gets, you know, spoken about. I may be showing my age here, but as a teenager watching The Field of Dreams, and saying, if you build it, they will come. And what we see in this area is quite often, if you build it, they won't come. And we're trying to fill up these physical activity groups and classes with people who are actually looking for something else. And given at a time when money is so tight, I think it's really important that we understand what will work to support these people to become and stay active. In some ways, you know, cancer is such a teachable moment. People really will consider changing their behaviour if they're given the support to do so. So, there may not be the same motivation to change in other population groups. But actually what we see from the evidence is, without that behaviour change support, the trends in terms of physical activity data show that people become less active after diagnosis, and they never become active again. There's no spontaneous change. We see people spontaneously give up smoking, eat more healthily, drink less, but the data shows that, you know, people become sedentary and they stay sedentary. And that's probably because of the cancer-related fatigue. I don't know if anyone on the call has experienced chronic fatigue or cancer-related fatigue, but it is extreme, it's severe, and it's hard to get over. But a gentle level of movement actually can really help counteract it. So, yes.
Okay. Okay, so what I'm hearing then is that if people are, if the way that people are trying to engage and active people is by putting on activities, and they're not using some of these other techniques like the motivational interviewing or some kind of nudging or behaviour change support, or you know, getting the healthcare professional to kind of be recommending the activity, then they're actually missing out on quite a lot of benefits there.
Yeah.
Is that fair, do you think? Okay.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
I think another thing you mentioned there that's really interesting is about the NICE and the 12 months of behaviour change support. That's definitely something we've found in the programmes that we're running with people, is that if we've got that ongoing follow-up for a long period of time, then the percentage of people active at least doesn't go down, but sometimes actually goes up over time, you know, but kind of after 3 months there's a certain percentage are active, and after 6 months it's actually higher if you've got that kind of ongoing support. So that I found really interesting as well. That definitely fits.
Yeah, and not everyone. This is where we have come on to, you know, the holy grail of public health of proportional universalism. Not everyone needs that much support, and it'll be those who, you know, have the highest individual and social barriers will need a lot more whilst those who, you know, where those who have the self-efficacy, as in the self-belief that they can become active and they've got social support, they may not need as much behaviour change as others. And it means that locally you can design a service that can put more of the resource into those who need it without excluding those who don't need as much. But not everyone needs to follow the same follow-up protocol. And I think that's, you know, for anyone considering taking this sort of approach, that's something that's important to consider, as well as understanding the role that digital and telephone and support can play, and group motivational support and volunteer support. You know, it doesn't all have to be one-to-one, face-to-face. That was one of the findings that came out of the work that Macmillan did, as well as some of the evidence reviews that we undertook.
Well, that segues really nicely, I think, into the talking about the Move More Behaviour Change Pack
and
the emails. Can you talk a little bit about, because I know obviously that was developed and then it was redone. Can you talk a little bit about how it was developed and kind of, I know that it was Justin who led more on the developing the pack the second time around, but maybe a little bit about kind of the use of the Combi model and the different behaviour change techniques that were included.
Yeah, sure. So I developed the behaviour change pack back in 2011 originally, and that was part of we wanted a high level call to action. When we went out with the media campaign, we developed a concise evidence review for healthcare professionals that made sure that there was at least something whilst we were doing our longer piece of work for individuals, so looking at what information and support could go into a print and digital format, and found that it was hugely popular. I based it on the work that I'd led on at the Department of Health, where we developed a patient pack to support behaviour change using predominantly techniques from motivational interviewing. And I worked with our expert advisory group that included a number of health psychologists and experienced medical practitioners in the field of behaviour change, like Dr. Vanessa Bogle, Dr. Tim Anstis, Professor Alan Marion Davies, and others, to amend it and make it more appropriate for cancer. And Macmillan, again, is fortunate enough to have a very experienced patient information team. So we developed it originally and made it available, and it was very popular. But it became clear after a period of time, and with any patient information resource, they need to be updated every 3 years to meet the information standard. So they are quality assured materials. It became clear that it was wanted for two reasons. So one, as a shared decision making tool that exercise professionals could use locally and walk through people sort of step by step why they might want to consider becoming more active, help people with that decision balance, explore their confidence and importance of making a change, and then for those who are ready, going on to set goals, look at what might get in the way, etc. But also that it was something that people wanted to use individually, and we were seeing a lot of individuals ordering it, but it hadn't really been designed to provide the level of support that those individuals might need. So we reviewed it, which Justin led on, looking at which behaviour change techniques were going to be most effective for physical activity. So UCL have a Centre for Behaviour Change led by Professor Susan Mickey, and they've done a lot of work looking at, for each lifestyle behaviour, which are the most effective techniques in supporting someone to make a sustained change. And we looked at those, what the evidence says about physical activity, and checked those against the Move More pack, and then also looked at what else would be better. So the pack itself was given a fresh look and feel. A lot of what was in the pack stayed relatively the same but made more ergonomically friendly. We also carried out with yourselves, John, a variety of focus groups to understand how different groups of people living with Beyond Cancer used the pack, what they liked, what they didn't like, what was more important, what they'd like to see. So the pack was updated using that, both that evidence and insight. But then looking at what we could take advantage of from a digital perspective. So making sure that there were more updated videos and case studies of people like you, so that if you are someone in your early 20s and you've had a cancer diagnosis versus someone in their, you know, perhaps in their late 60s, are you able to find someone more like you who's become and stayed active, making sure we've got that professional, credible voice, so clinicians advocating why it's important. Because of the point that's come up time and again about people wanting to know that what they're doing is safe for them, we set up and asked the expert physio so that you can go online and within 24 hours you can have a question answered about perhaps the consequence of treatment you're facing, you're worried about a particular activity that you want to do. We set up an online community, so to provide peer support, and also motivational emails that people could sign up to that are segmented by whether someone was active prior to treatment, their age and gender, and I think stage of treatment. And Justin is, as part of his PhD, is carrying out a randomized control trial on this. And I think I'm allowed to say that what the indicative findings show so far, and no doubt Justin will talk about this more next week, and I think that'll be an absolutely fascinating webinar to attend, is that the pack, as in the overall resource, both the printed pack and the digital support, is effective as a standalone intervention in supporting inactive people with cancer to become active at 6 months. And that is huge. So that's a big deal. And it's incredibly exciting. So we know that if there's one thing that's being advocated in a hospital is to make sure that resource is healthcare professionals are doing the training and they're signposting people to that resource. I mean, ideally, they're also working in partnership with service providers to link in with health walks, or those service providers are also providing that motivational support. But it's exciting to have been part of that.
Yeah, and just to kind of explain to people what we've managed to do, this is something I've worked with Justin on, with the emails, is that there's different versions of these emails. So if somebody signs up and they were inactive before treatment, they actually get a different version of the emails than if they were active before treatment, because they're more likely to need less support to get started. And that different emails would support people through the different stages of change. So if they were, we would kind of make some assumptions, have to admit, that, okay, they're going to start at either pre-contemplation or contemplation. So there's email that was about to move through from that stage to the next one. And then from the contemplation stage to preparation, to action, to maintenance, and there's different emails for supporting people at the maintenance stage. And there's also these different case studies in there, depending on whether somebody was a man or a woman, what age they were as well. So it was really trying to make the emails tailored to where somebody was and keep nudging them in the right direction at the different times. I think that's part of why this works so well, because it was really trying to tailor it around the individual. Let's move on then from that pack and the email support there, and just talk a little bit about the marketing. What were some of the challenges with getting referrals onto these programs with the clinical nurse specialist?
Well, I mean, I think it's often the challenge that we have in working in physical activity is how do you get the buy-in of clinicians? And in cancer, particularly in secondary care, the gatekeepers rather than GPs are clinical nurse specialists. So in each cancer centre, there will be a lead clinical nurse specialist for a particular tumour group. So there'll be a lung nurse specialist, there'll be a breast cancer nurse specialist, and so on. And they are the gatekeepers to people having physical activity advocated to them. So there is a big intervention that the promotion of physical activity is part of, which is called the recovery package. And that has a number of interventions within it, one of which is someone having an assessment and a care plan each time their stage or stage of the cancer journey, you know, changes, to understand what they've had and what they want. And that's person-centred. But how do you get physical activity as part of that? So we did a number of things, one of which was the training. We also worked very closely with the service providers to support them to build up a relationship with the clinical nurse specialist team. So, for example, in certain localities, the lead exercise professional might attend the nursing team meetings, attend the professional multidisciplinary team meetings about patients. They would go in and present about the benefits of physical activity, advocate the training, tell them about the service, provide them with leaflets. Some areas set up lead tables, which they published monthly to show which areas of specialism were signposting more patients. Often they would invite a nurse specialist onto the project steering group. In one area, for example, in Luton, we funded a nurse specialist to be a clinical advocate across her peers. And these are all pieces of work that Public Health England have also been doing with their GP clinical champion program, is like, how do you get clinicians to advocate to clinicians? We also used feedback from patients themselves, so the patient voice, to talk about how it had helped them. And we did a lot of, we provided support at the front end with marketing, so developing a toolkit to support healthcare, promote the benefits of physical activity within a consultation and clinical setting. One thing we did to make it easier, which again, John, we worked with you on, which was lessons from hospitals. And again, this is something that really excited me, because just like you have to change the behaviour of each individual, you have to change the behaviour of each nurse or oncologist so that they always remember to advocate physical activity to all of their patients. And that's a really hard thing to do. By sending a letter directly from a hospital to their patient list can act as that very brief advice if the design of the letter is right, and it can go out. And what we did is we worked with the hospital information governance systems. We designed a letter based on all the insight work that we'd done and sent it out centrally, and we saw quite a significant take up. John, you'll have to correct me. Was it about a 20% take up, increase in take up?
From 7% to 17%, or an extra 17%. So went up to 24% total.
Yeah. So, an extra, quite a significant additional percentage of people then not just thinking about moving more, but going on and accessing the Move More service locally. And that's obviously, whilst logistically takes a bit of time to figure out, is a lot cheaper and a lot easier than getting your nurse specialist to talk about it to all of their patients. So I think it's those innovations that it's important to share and spread so that others can take advantage of them and apply them to their setting.
Yeah, and that was a really exciting project. When we'd seen direct mail work really, really well elsewhere, and the chance to work with the marketing team and with yourselves on designing that letter and going through all the research and identifying what were the key messages and who did it need to go from and how did we get it out, was a big project. And then to see that go like from 7% of people joining the physical activity program to an extra 17% was just enormous. A really exciting project. Right, so we're running a little short on time. I'm just going to move on to the summary now, and then we're going to get into the I'm going to explain about what we can do to help for anybody on the call who's been interested in some of these ideas, and then we're going to move to the Q&A session. So in summary, behavior change techniques are incredibly effective at supporting inactive people from hard to reach groups to become active. Research-based marketing techniques, like this letter from the hospitals, for example, really, really effective at engaging inactive people. And you can use these to engage really hard-to-reach groups like the people living with cancer that we've been talking about today, but other groups as well, women and girls, over 55s, disabled people too. You can engage hundreds or thousands of people into your activities using these kind of techniques. And what we've found, what we've seen in some of the work we've done with Joe was that people love this support. They really appreciate this kind of behavior change based support to help them to get active. And what's more is that we found with the work with Justin on the email is you can actually automate some of this long-term behavior change follow-up and it still works, which is really exciting. So there's a couple of options now for anyone who's been interested in the ideas that we've talked about today. You can do it yourself, or there's also the option of getting our help, and totally up to you which one's the right one for you. We're just going to talk you through some of the steps that are involved and some of the pros and cons of each one. If you want to do some of this yourself, then learning about behavior change, if that's not something you've studied so much before, is really key. Learning about marketing to people with long-term health conditions, finding the right research reports and the right studies to kind of understand what is the evidence, what is proven to be effective, obviously then reading through them, setting it all up, testing everything till it works. There's a lot involved. To try and help to make it easier for you to implement some of these ideas, I'm offering a free strategy call. And this is just to talk about you, your project, your targets, help you understand which of these ideas, where we've been involved in them at least, can work for you and for your project. And then what I'll do after that is I'm going to send you through relevant resources and case studies and contacts in the industry, research papers, all the stuff that where we've been involved, because we've done a lot of the research with Macmillan Cancer Support, so I've got access to a lot of those different studies and case studies and what have you, so that you can see if you know what's right for you. You can make the case internally with your management, your team. If you then want any support after that, then we're available to help you set up parts of that as well, especially around the marketing side of things. We've got an experienced team, we've got proven systems. So, but that's if that's relevant for you. So, I'm offering this free strategy call. This is for people in organizations that have got ambitious targets. So at least trying to get 200 people or more active in the next year. So if you're in a council or a county sports partnership, this could well be really relevant for you. To book one of those calls and go and fill in the feedback form. And even if you don't want to book that call, then still fill in the form, because you're going to get a link to some of the resources from today. And so if you do fill that in and you want to book a call, then you can book that time directly into my calendar. The feedback form is going to point you to a page where you can book a time directly in my calendar. So to do that, fill in the feedback form. We're going to send you the replay of the call. You can book a time with me. Go to makesportfun.com/Joe Foster. That's makesportfun.com/Joe Foster. And then while you're filling that in, we're going to start working through the questions. So you can write your questions into the chat box. I'm going to paste that link into the chat box as well, so that you're able to just click on that and be able to go straight through and fill that in. It's quite a short form. Let me just check the link. Perfect, that is working smoothly. So once you've had a chance to do that, write your questions into the chat box and we'll start working through them. I see we've got a couple of questions already. So just going to give you about a minute to go and fill that form in and book your time, and then we're going to start working through the questions. Okay, that's probably enough time for filling it in, hopefully. I see we had a question from Sally. Can you name the evaluation report that looked at these different activity services? Not sure exactly what that means. Joe, what do you
I think that's probably referring to the insight research that we did. Which from memory is called Motivating People with Cancer to Become Active. If you go on to macmillan.org.uk/wonderdrug, that has the majority of insight research and evidence reviews up there that Macmillan carried out.
Perfect. Sally said that was regards to the Luton and Lincolnshire studies.
Okay, so that is
about that.
It's about to be published. So Macmillan, and you know, feel free to contact Macmillan directly about this. Obviously, I'm now at Public Health England. They are in the final stages. My understanding is of finalising the evaluation and a best practice guidance document, which includes all the learnings from the local testing and case studies, but it isn't publicly available yet. But you could always contact Macmillan, just go through their general, either contact your local Macmillan partnership manager or go through their sort of generic contact us form if you want to. Want to chivvy that on a bit, but otherwise it will be published, I think, in the early spring.
I'm going to put the links to these for everybody who fills in the feedback form, the makesportfund.com/JoeFoster. I'm going to send you the links through to some of these things that we've mentioned, so the research reports and that UCL research and some other bits as well. Okay, let's have a look. Isla was asking, what award did the Move More pathway win? Was it the Move More pack that won that award?
So the Move More pack was what Move More pack won the BMA Patient Information Award for Self Care in 2017, and it also won an award back in 2012 with the BMJ. Actually, it didn't win; it was runner up. With a BMJ award there, and the pathway itself has won a number of awards locally. So local test sites have put in for awards and won. So if we've got, for example, Flame Awards with UK Active County Sport Partnership Awards, a Nursing Time Award, but the central programme didn't go in for any awards specifically.
Okay. What else have we got here? Nick Atkins, how does Joe see behaviour change fitting in with the move towards social prescribing?
Oh, I think it's integral. I think social prescribing sometimes to me sounds like another buzzword for what was information prescriptions. If you are prescribing perhaps a more community-based activity to improve quality of life outcome, then again, you have to take an individual behaviour change approach to delivering that. How that then fits into what people go on to do, I think it would depend very much on the activity that somebody chooses. Obviously, if they're choosing physical activity, you'd want to build in the motivational support still, because if someone's attending because they're very socially isolated and that's decreasing their health outcomes, they will need good social support. So in a nutshell, I think it's absolutely critical to the success of a social prescribing scheme.
All right. Well, apologies to everybody who had questions we didn't have a chance to get to. The time is up for today, so we're going to have to call it a day. If you haven't done yet, make sure you go and fill in that feedback form, the makesportfun.com/JoeFoster. Then you're going to get links to all of the resources that we're mentioning as we went along. And you can book in that strategy call for talking through how to use some of these ideas locally and getting more useful resources afterwards as well. So if you haven't filled that in already, please go and fill that in now. Joe, thanks very much for coming on today. Was there anything else that you wanted to tell everybody about, promote before we wrap up?
No, just to say thank you for listening, and I hope you found it helpful.
Great. Well, thanks very much, everybody. Really appreciate your time and your attention. And like I said, make sure you fill in that feedback form so that you can get all of those useful links and resources. And hopefully we'll talk to you all soon. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.